there's just a learning curve.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what I tell guys, the learning curve of so many things that you need. It's not, and it's not that these guys aren't capable, but you need to go see that world.
So today we talked to a guy named Coach Bill Clark. Now, Coach Clark has been in the state of Alabama for many, many years. Now, we go through the story of growing up with just extremely middle class, honestly, really similar to me. His dad was a high school ball coach like me. Mom played the organ in the church, the piano in the church, just like mine, and knew from early on he wanted to be a college football coach, just like me. So it's really been fun talking to him. And there's a lot of things, and I know Coach Clark really well, but there's a lot of things in this story that I didn't know. And how he starts off and battles injury at an extremely early age, and then how he overcame that, started coaching high school football like 19 years old. It's crazy. And then just the journey from taking small programs and making them better, and then helping start a football program at South Alabama, being one of the only guys that competed and beat Hoover in their heyday in Rush Probst, but then also getting the UAB job. The journey's there, and then also how they built that program. And then there's a lot of leadership things we talk about in this episode and what he's doing now, how he's analyzing games after the fact, and just the journey that he's had. And maybe one day getting back into college coaching. You're going to love this episode with Coach Bill Clark. Coach, thank you so much for joining us today.
Glad to be here.
All right, so let me give a little background. Coach Bill Clark, legendary high school coach in Alabama for a long time. Knew my dad, coached against my dad, knew my dad real well. Coached a lot younger than my dad, but was coaching early toward the end of dad's career. And then transitioned into college, more known for college because, I mean, I guess you were probably more college than about equal.
Yeah.
And so from Alabama, spent most of his life in Alabama. But a lot of what we talk about is managing people, owning things, and there's nothing more aware of an owner than a team.
Yeah.
And you've done that with players, but also the thing that people don't really understand, especially in college football, because I was on a bunch of college football staffs myself, is the guy that manages the coaches, that you're managing coaches as much as you're managing players.
Yeah.
And so I want to get into that later on. But tell me, just give everybody a background of, like, you know, what part of Alabama you're from, all that good stuff. Just talk to us that.
Yeah, so grew up in Ohatchee. That's Alabama, right. Little Ohatchee. Dad was a high school coach. Mom was a home ec teacher. Mom played the piano at church. So, you know, we were there all the time at church.
Are you kidding me? Did you know my mom still plays the organ at the church?
Really?
My dad was a high school coach. My mom plays the organ at church.
There we go.
There you go.
All right. So, it turned out all right.
Exactly.
But, you know, I think those things that we always, the school, the church, family, faith, I mean, all of it was rolled together,
mm-hmm.
you know, as long as I can remember, which was a great growing up. Sure. Didn't have a lot of money, but we had a great family and had a brother and, you know, older than me, a couple years. And so we moved to Piedmont.
Yep.
Dad became high school coach, got out of coaching mm-hmm. and started selling some insurance and real estate. Okay. So I saw a different side of the world. Played at Piedmont, ended up at Jack State.
Now, let me go back. Why did dad get out of coaching and get into out of coaching and get into the business world?
You know, dad was one of those guys. And, you know, when you grow up, like your dad was a successful coach, mine was. Dad was one of those guys that was innovative. Mom, you know, was that homebody, the family. And I think it would be, he was going to have to move to take that other job. And,
to make more money.
To make more money. I mean,
whatever.
Yeah. And so all of a sudden what happened, he's selling insurance on the side. And literally it was him and Bill Burgess.
Really?
Yeah, they're selling on the side. Franklin Life, who had taken coaches in. You know, we just didn't have much money. And so all of a sudden you start making some money. And so he gets out 1 year to sell insurance, hates it. Gets back into coaching at Piedmont.
Okay.
And so, but just, it doesn't work. And he goes back to insurance real estate. I don't think he's ever really happy, but, you know, he was good at it.
Yeah.
He did that till I graduated. So I didn't get to play for him.
See, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But he, okay. All right. So he's selling insurance. You didn't get to play for him. And then did he just continue selling insurance and doing that throughout your
life? Well, this is where the coach story gets really neat. So he knows he's going to get back into it kind of then. I think I would have probably had to move and, you know, get into my senior year. You know, I've got a chance to go play.
Yeah.
You know, of course, I'd had this back injury, which mm-hmm. really becomes such a focus.
You had the back injury since then?
Oh, yeah. I heard it squatting, lifting weights in 1983. So, you know, we get another coach in. You know, it's just a different time. You know, different time in weights. My dad was was literally one of the first guys lifting free weights in the state of Alabama. Went to Georgia in 71, got free weight. He goes to Texas in 70 and gets the wishbone. Where Alabama gets it, that's another story.
Yeah.
But about innovation and not staying, you know, going trying to be the best and going to look, et cetera. But I think, I know he's going to get back in coaching. So that's kind of out there. So I've got this back injury. I hurt squatting. Don't know what it is. That's how I meet Jimmy Andrews in 1985 when he says, "You're done playing." And I said, "No, I'm not." A year later, going into college, I am done, which gets me started coaching early. So I start coaching in 1986.
Now, when was the last year your dad coached?
The last year he coached, that's a good question. He coached for me at Prattville through the 2001 season.
So I guarantee that your dad and my dad shared wishbone notes.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, all those wishbone guys knew each other.
They did.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was a small circle, that's and then correct. It got smaller.
That's right.
And then it's obviously non-existent these days.
That's right.
For the most part.
Yeah. So all those great stories of these wishbone guys and, you know, just being on the cutting edge, you know.
Yeah.
So I start, dad goes, he gets into coaching, back into coaching at Asheville, little old
Asheville.
Yeah,
up 59.
But the principal there was his O-line coach named Ken Logan. I get to go start coaching. So Coach Burgess says, "Hey, you got a chance to be a student coach at Jacksonville." And, you know, there wasn't really a lot of student coaches.
There wasn't a thing.
You'd really almost been more of a manager or whatever. Or I get to go be a coach at Asheville. And I go coach the O-line, believe it or not.
Really?
3 years there.
So are you in college?
And then I am in college.
You're going to college.
Jacksonville State.
You're at Jack State. And Jacksonville State's not far from Asheville, if you don't know it, in Alabama. So you're in college taking classes and coaching the afternoon.
Yeah, when I see that, you know, I'm that guy that gets injured, which is why I always have a heart for these injured guys. So I get hurt, can't play in college, which was my dream.
Yeah.
But I get to coach, which I knew I wanted to do, you know, and I back up to Ohatchee days. As long as I can remember, it's what I wanted to do.
Yeah,
you know,
me too.
We had the one bedroom in the back that had the air. You know, it's the only one that had that air unit where you watched the old 16mm.
Yeah, click, 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 click,
that's
click.
That's where I, you know, that's where I grew up, wanted to do it, and knew that's what I was always going to do. There was never a doubt.
Bill, this is crazy how much we're similar, because since the time I was five, I remember that's all I wanted to do. You know, most kids growing up, hey, what do you want to be when you grow up? You know, they said, you know, a vet or a doctor. I wanted to coach college football.
Yeah, you knew it.
And because I remember sitting in, my dad didn't watch film at home much.
Yeah.
He was always at the stadium watching film. And I remember on Sunday afternoons, 2 o'clock after church, me sitting in there in the dark, falling asleep half the time paying attention and hearing it.
Yeah.
Click, 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 click. I mean, and going back and forth. So that's crazy, the similarities in the two of us.
Well, you know, there's just something about coaches, son.
I agree.
And, you know, it's just, you've been raised tough.
Mm-hmm.
You've been raised, all those things that a coach, especially old school.
Yeah.
You know.
Just like dad, your dad, my dad.
There was love.
Yeah.
But it was tough love.
Mm-hmm.
And, but that's couldn't been a much better growing up
no.
school with ball and all that stuff. So I experienced that till I was, you know, junior high.
Yeah. So you get your coaching in Asheville, then you graduate from Jacksonville State. Then where does it transition from there?
So in 90, I have a GA, just so funny. I have a GA offer, and then I have a job offer at Piedmont.
GA, graduate assistant. So what that is for most people that don't know is it took me 2.5 years to get a GA job. Yeah. They're very, very hard to come by, extremely hard to come by, because most of the time someone gets elevated. Most of the time it's somebody's cousin or somebody knows somebody. It is a... It is a true business of who you know. Now,
no doubt.
You have to know what you're doing.
Correct.
But it's truly a business of who you know. So graduate assistant, I made $14,000 a year at NC State.
Yeah. So I won't say the school, but it was, I didn't think the coach, I knew enough. I'd been coaching, so I knew the guy was kind of on the hot seat. And I had a chance to go back to Piedmont as the defensive coordinator.
Okay.
And I knew they were going to be good. Really a chance to go to the other side of the ball and make a little bit of money when I, you know, $20,000.
Yeah.
But that's what got me to the defensive side of the ball. And
okay.
So I started there in 90, and you can tell me how you want to go from there.
Okay, so after there, how long did you stay as a coordinator?
So I'm a defensive coordinator all the way till I become the head coach at Prattville in 99.
Really? So you go, so I knew you were a defensive-minded coach. So you get into high school. You're in the high school, you're liking it. Where'd you go from? How many stops from Piedmont?
Piedmont for 2 years, 3 years at Tuscaloosa County, where I got to play against your dad.
Were you with Robert? No.
It was with Bobby
Moore. With Bobby Moore?
Yes.
What years were you with Bobby?
92, 93, and 94.
Yeah. You played against you, Central, Hueytown, and Justin Lanier.
Yep. And so from there, I go to Coffee County, Georgia, though, for 2 years, which let me see that one quad A, you know, Colquitt and Val Austin, those guys. Come back to Dothan in 97, 98. And then 99, I take the Prattville job.
Okay, so you're at Prattville. How long? You had a lot of success at Prattville. How long? 9 years. Mm-hmm.
9 seasons.
Now, tell me about the success there, because you had some pretty good success there.
Yeah, Prattville was a really cool story. I get to see Prattville. I'm at Tuscaloosa County. First year, first game was on a Thursday night, so I get to go see Prattville on a Friday night and see this one school community. You know, everybody's over there. I'm like, man, this is kind of like growing up in an Ohatchee or a Pink Mike on the big level.
On a large scale.
So as I see those guys, you know, you just kind of keep an eye on a program. So when they came open, it was starting to come open, getting ready for the 99 year. And I turned down some head jobs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just wanted to perfect the craft. And,
yeah,
you know, I knew, no offense to smaller school jobs, but it was, I'm going to change every sprinkler head, cut grass.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see if I could get to that next level. So when the Prattville job came open, and I said, it's kind of like that GA situation. They were really open. It wasn't already decided.
That's rare.
Now, there was a lot of things that weren't good, which really ended up helping me down the road. Prattville was, you know, they didn't really know exactly what's your color. You know, which line are we using?
Mm.
You know, we don't have a logo. You know, the things that really was good, I was the AD. So for 9 years, I'm the athletic director, and we go from, there were 18 guys show up at my first meeting. I take the job in June.
Players?
Players, 6A, 18. We get about almost 60 out before the first game. That tells you kind of the evolution mm-hmm. to when I leave there, it's 130 and,
right.
you know, state championships. And some, not bragging, but just
no.
cool evolution of things that happened along the way to get there.
You were, and correct me if I'm wrong, back then, because I was playing ball at the time, so I wasn't totally immersed in it, but that was back when you, Prattville and Hoover were the two dominant forces. You were one of the only guys to beat Rush Propes in that Hoover jumping off point. Because most people remember Hoover, Rush has got a decorated past. We both know that. But he's a great football coach.
Yes.
He's a wonderful football coach. Coach, he wins everywhere he goes.
Yeah.
He knows football. So you were one of the only ones to beat those guys during
that
time.
Let's back up. Rush played for my dad. We coached together at Asheville.
You coached together?
Yes.
I did not know that.
Rush about 10 years older than me. He went to Ohatchee, played for dad. His dream was to come back and coach for dad.
Mm-hmm.
So in 87, 88, and 89, we were together.
I did not
know
that. That's awesome.
Yes. So there's that. And, you know, we got this path. You know, Rush and him kind of get going before we do. You know, they're winning. We get beat by them in 04.
Okay.
And then in 06, you know, we're there. We're close every year. And we finally get there in 06. And then we win it in 06 and win it in 07. And then I go to college from there.
Right. Great transition. Why did you transition to college coaching?
You know, it was I felt like we'd achieved everything I wanted to achieve in high school. And I'd been a high school coach for years. It was, okay, what's going to be the right spot? I'd had a couple offers, college offers.
You did.
But it just was not the right choice. So when South Alabama, and this is we could talk history of South Alabama, but this is a funny story. Kevin Steele is going to take the South Alabama job.
The head job.
He's going to leave Alabama and take the head job. Nobody knows it. He's asked me to come be the DC.
Now, let me ask you a question. Is Joey there yet?
Not yet.
Oh.
So, Joey, this job is coming open. And it's-
Sorry. We're talking like we're sitting at a coffee table in the living room, and I just forget. So, Joey is Joey Jones. Joey's a really, really good high school coach at Mountain Brook High School. A lot of success there. And so, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No worries.
Yeah.
So Kevin's going to take the job.
Right.
Him and the president have a little disagreement. He backs out. A couple of more guys, and Joey gets the job, who I'd known forever. He offers me the defense coordinator job. I kind of help.
Yeah.
You know, I'm assistant head coach, so we go in together.
Now this is starting the program.
Yes. Come from total scratch.
Total scratch.
Yes.
How was that? How was that, like, process?
Oh, my gosh. You know, so I'm scheduling games. We're going to find players. We have no facilities.
No.
Nothing. So, all right, I think this is a good place to put the building. That far. We're playing at LAD. Kind of like playing at Legion.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Players from nothing. You know, so the question the first year was, all right, are we going to play a prep schedule?
Yeah.
Are we going to play, not sit out 1 year? Georgia State was coming along the same time. They decided to sit out a year.
They were. Yeah.
I was like, hey, let's play a prep schedule.
Play games.
Let's play games and create some fans. We played seven prep teams. One, we're 7-0, which translates the next year into playing some one-double-A teams, still some prep games. Went undefeated again. Now, here we go. We're starting to pick them up, though.
And, right.
You know, when we go to FBS in 2012, it was the fastest anybody had ever gone to FBS.
Really?
Which was tough, you know.
So going from there, that process had to be hard, but it had to be kind of fun.
It was both. Yeah, it was hard and fun. You know, and I think along the way, you know, good Lord was preparing me for things to come, you know, but I had been a head coach, and you know how it is when you've been the guy and then you step back and, you know, you got to put that ego back and you got to, we want to be great defensive. I'm the assistant head coach, but I'm not the head coach. So it was really those things. I think as I go to the next stages, I could tell guys, let me tell you something. Yeah, I was an assistant for years and was a head coach, but I even stepped back to the assistant role.
Sure.
So I knew the things, that's how I wanted to be treated.
Yeah. So how long were you at South?
So from the 08, you know, I left after the 07 season, so it would have been 08 through that 12 season.
Okay.
At Christmas is when I left to take the Jackson State job.
So you're at South Alabama. What was the process of getting your first head coaching job in college?
Yeah, it wasn't easy. You know, I started the process really as I'm coming out of high school and I know I'm going to be an assistant. I'm thinking, okay, there's going to be a time when I'm ready to be the head coach. I got to get my name out. One, just to help in recruiting.
Yeah.
To kind of get us who we are. So I called this thing TDP, Total Defensive Program.
Okay.
And Tony Franklin and I had talked before. Tony Franklin, you know, was with Rush, you know, kind of had left Kentucky as the one of the first spread guys. You know the story.
Tony's probably made more money on his selling the system than he has coaching ball.
Well, Tony was a great business guy.
He was.
You know, and so here I am. I was kind of the defensive guy. There was the offensive guy, Hoover, Rush, and Tony.
Yeah.
They were together. So he says, hey, why don't you do your system with me? And I really couldn't at the time because I was a high school coach, but it gave me the idea. And I got approached by another group who said, why don't you do this and do it national?
Wow.
So I think, okay, we'll help sell our program. We'll sell our defense, maybe sell Bill Clark a little bit as well. And I ended up with 145 schools across the nation running my defense.
Wow. Yeah. Now, was that really similar to Tony's situation where they were paying a subscription and you were visiting with them on, you know, once or twice a year, things like that?
Yep.
So you held a seminar.
Yep.
They paid X number of dollars.
Yep. And I did it on DVDs.
Yeah.
And so they would get, of course, I'll have guys to this day say, Coach, man, I watched your defending the wing tee, and we did this. This was last year. You know, so it's still out there.
Are you kidding?
No, and those guys really.
Didn't that make your just heart feel good?
It does. And, and that was a chance to talk about things besides defense. You know, how we want to treat our kids and our faith. You know, it's just these are ways to still let the light shine that we want to shine. But it was a way kind of to, I know that was your question was about how do you get your name out?
Mm-hmm.
How do you establish yourself? How can you be confident and not arrogant or all those things I think that go together to kind of promote your brand. And that's what I was doing then. Now that took time, but I think one, it helped our recruiting. It helped me. I'm speaking nationally to these guys at clinics, Glacier clinics around the country. As I got ready to get my name out, and of course, 13 was Jack State my alma mater.
Mm-hmm.
There was some help there.
Sure.
You know, they did know me.
Yeah.
So we can talk about that.
You replaced Jack?
Jack Crow.
Okay. Who, I love Jack Crow. Yeah. You love Jack Crow. Jack Crow. My dad loved Jack Crow. They were, I mean, just a great football coach. So you see these processes out there these days, and I know times have changed.
Yeah.
But like, was it an interview process, or did they say, we want Bill Clark, call you up, we want you this much money, this many years, come to, or was it a whole process?
No, it was a process.
Walk me through that.
Yeah, so, you know, I think for me, it was, okay, I'm ready, it's time, and that's where you try not to get frustrated.
Yeah.
You know, okay, wait a second, I feel like I'm ready, I had some offers before, but maybe it's, and I knew it needed to be something with people that knew me.
Sure.
A UAB.
Yeah.
A Troy. Jack State was kind of my dream. You know, that was my alma mater. My dad lived in Piedmont right down the road.
20 minutes away.
Yeah, all those things. But what I had to do was, and we were playing in Hawaii when I get the news Jack was retiring. My phone, we're playing Hawaii. That was kind of the end of the year, that FBS year where we're going to use that as a bowl game. We had our one afternoon off.
Yeah.
You know, and you're talking about the good Lord. I'm looking down at Battleship Row at Pearl Harbor.
Wow.
And I'm up here and my phone gets service and I got 40 something messages from people saying, hey, Jack State's open. Behind the scenes, and I could say that's Greg Seitz and Ed Led and all those guys there. They were assistant ADs at the time, and Greg's the AD now, but it was not a done deal. They had another guy in mind already.
Wow. Okay.
So, you know, I just start calling, and I've got a game to worry about, but I start letting people know that I'm interested, very interested. What do I need to do? And it's putting those fillers out to say, I'm the right guy for you.
Yeah.
Here's what we can do. get me in the door.
You know, yeah.
And it's anybody and everybody.
Oh, you gotta call the kitchen sink when it comes to a situation like that.
And yeah, so that was kind of my process of people that know me and knew me and who could I get in front of to get into that mix.
All right, hard question. Could you have left Prattville High School as a head coach and gone to be a head coach in college?
I could have. And I know people don't really want to believe that, but I would not have been as successful if I had not gone to South. And here's what I tell you.
Yeah.
This is what people don't really understand. I'm going to make a caveat here.
Yeah.
Where we were at the end, the Prattvilles, the Hoovers, I go to South Alabama and it's a big step back. Not because we were just starting.
Absolutely. People don't get it. Like football in Alabama, Texas, parts of Georgia, parts of Florida. It's a big deal.
Yes.
And you were at one of the best schools.
In college.
It was college without recruiting.
That's when you weren't recruiting in high school,
yeah,
as it is now as much. But I could have gone to a Jack State and I think would have ended up maybe being okay, not going to UAB.
Mm.
Because the difference in FBS and my level, there's just a learning curve.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what I tell guys, the learning curve of so many things that you need. It's not that these guys aren't capable, but you need to go see that world.
It's like Dog Daggett used to tell me, you don't know, and you don't know you don't.
That's right. You don't know what you don't know.
Yeah. So the years at South prepared you dramatically.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, the recruiting process, the money stuff, the expense, all those things.
Oh, it led to success, you know, and I think that's the difference. I think we'd have found a way because we were close. I think Jack State was more on a level where we were, which is kind of like starting out at South. But that jump to FBS and that level is different. It's just so different. It just is. And so that's where people have such a hard time making that jump versus making a jump to maybe a Division II.
Sure.
Can be done. Still would be hard, but not as hard. But going to FBI, that's really hard.
So what year was Jacksonville State? What year was that?
2013.
So I was already out because my last year. We never played against each other when you were at Jacksonville. You were only there 1 year.
1 year.
So Jacksonville State for a year, and I want to say this respectfully to Coach Crow.
Sure.
Because we both love Coach Crow, and Coach Crow did a great – I mean, he's wonderful. Coming into Jacksonville State, what did you have to clean up?
Yeah, so Jack and I see each other once a week. I'm on the Coach Safely board. You know, I'm the acting president right now, which we could talk about that later. But what Jack had done was created a winning atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
He had raised money. He had helped build this facility. I mean, I'm coming into a good situation.
It's a great
I've got
facility.
Players.
Yeah.
You know, I look at Jack State and go, okay, they're 100-something in defense. And maybe they weren't 5 years before. But right there was a time – you know, had not won a FCS playoff game. They had won the conference, but not won a playoff game. So, all right, here's our goals. Mm-hmm. Let's get the defense. Let's keep scoring points. Let's get the defense better. And let's just elevate. Let's just elevate. And, hey, let's go win a playoff game. We got to get in the playoffs first.
Yeah.
And then let's go try and win a playoff game. So it was just taking what was already there and just trying to take a step.
Yeah, so it was more – it was truly a tactical thing of like, hey, let's make the players on the field better.
Yes.
Because Jack had done – I mean – let me tell you something. From an FCS stadium perspective,
yes,
it's awesome.
Yeah, let me tell you, Jack, and those guys with him, you got a great town. I mean, you know, that's home. So I know it. I know the people. And that helped me go in to know the Greg Seitzes of the world, the Ed Letts of the world, these guys and people around the community that could help me. So I had some things that were helping me. And I just said, hey, let's not step backwards. This is good. Now let's go try to be great.
So you're there for a year.
Yeah.
Have some success there. What was the process from getting the UAB job?
Yeah. So this is very interesting. So what happened, we had literally, when I tell you we had the whole team coming back, we had the whole team. And that was when FCS was really the time you could bring those FBS guys back.
So the people that don't understand and know college football, back in the day, there are a handful of schools in the country that they were just really pegged as taking what we call drop downs.
Right.
So Division One to Division One AA, we're using old terms, but FCS to FBS, these kids could drop down and not sit out.
That's right. And that was the beauty.
Oh, and you guys had boatloads of those good players. And there's a couple of, but for the most part, Jacksonville State was one of the places to go in the country.
Yeah, one of the nicest FCS schools. in the great state. So you would get a guy who maybe had an injury, mm-hmm. maybe tore his labrum. So now he's the third string guy and can't catch up. Or he's the backup quarterback, which we've seen for years.
Yeah.
So we started getting those guys. Plus, I had so many relationships being a high school coach in the state.
Oh, my gosh.
Everybody knows me. I know
all the college coaches know you.
Yeah. So a lot of great mm-hmm. advantages there. And so we had, not only did we have our team coming back, you know, we got beaten in the third round. Close game with Eastern Washington.
Who was awesome.
He was really good. We had some really good wins, first two rounds. But we had that team coming back, and we had some guys coming that nobody even had that knew about. Of course, you know, John Gross, who was my offensive coordinator, takes the job, and
does I love John.
Those guys. So there we go. Now, so, UAB.
So you go to UAB. What was that process like?
So here's the story on UAB. You know, I had been interested when Coach McGee got hired by Brian Mackin.
I love Brian. Brian's a great friend of mine.
So I'm at the coaches convention. We're playing for the third. You know, I hear about UAB coming open. I have a guy, I'm at Sweetwater High School, Stacy Luker, the head coach there, who coached with me in Alabama, Mississippi, goes, man, I hear you're going to UAB. I said, no. I said, no offense to UAB. It could be great. I've had players there, Zach Woodfin and so on. Love Birmingham, but they're not committed. I'm at the coaches' convention a few days later. I mean, I'm literally get off the game, the last game, go recruit. You know how you're in college. You get off the road, you go recruit. And I'm at the convention. Football Scoop, which is mm-hmm. social media that puts out all the coaches that are hired and fired, says Bill Clark's taking the UAB job. I have not spoke to him.
You've not spoke one word.
I get a call, my president.
At Jack State.
A trustee. Now, I mean, everybody's happy. So I get a search firm call me.
Hold on one second. This is crazy. So you have not heard from Brian Mack and no one at UAB, and it pops up. So let me say this. Let me go back. Footballscoop.com. They post every day. A lot of it's accurate.
Yeah.
A lot of it, some of it's not. Yeah. But for the most part, it's all the what's in the wares of what's going on in college football. I read it every day for years when I was coaching in college. You read it every day, whatever. So the Scoop says that you're going to UAB and you've yet to talk to anybody.
I called Scott with Football Scoop. He said, Coach, that's what we're hearing. I said, please take that down before I get fired. and they're like, Coach, what are we talking about? I said, I don't know what we're talking about. So funny, that afternoon I get a call from the search. That's running the search for UAB, and it's would I meet with UAB. I'm in state retirement.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's just meet.
Yeah.
So I decide, all right, Lord.
So let me go back. What did you say to the person from Jack State?
I said, no, I haven't taken that job. I said, no, they're, because I probably don't call them back if I remember correctly. Maybe that afternoon, say, okay, they are interested. I just wanted you to know.
Yeah.
I will speak to them. Coach, you're not going to take the UAB job. They're terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, we were having Jack State, UAB guys starting to call us
here
about transferring from UAB to Jack State.
It was a really rough, let me say this, and I'm a UAB grad, everybody knows that. It was a really rough transition from when Watson left in those years. Yeah. From between Watson and you, it was rough.
Yeah.
It was.
And I knew that. And I knew the store. I'm from there. I had players there. I knew Birmingham.
Yeah.
I know a lot. I don't know everything, obviously, mm-hmm. but I know a lot. So I agree to meet with Brian Mack, mm-hmm. Shannon Ely, his assistant, AD, and Izell Reese.
I did not know Izell was involved.
Did not know Izell Reese. And, you know, some of those times when you just feel you've had to answer so many questions through the years, you know at Jack State. I mean, I was interviewed at Jack State.
Mm-hmm.
I went through the process. I'd been through the process at Prattville. I'd done other jobs where people had interviewed me, and I was the number two guy back. When my early years, we know you're going to be great, but you're too young.
Mm.
So I had gone through it through the years. So
sure.
This was kind of like me interviewing them.
Yeah.
You know, more than them interviewing me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Brian calls me soon thereafter. You're the guy I wanted before. We got to have you. You know, and it was, you know, I'm talking to Jennifer about it, and we're saying, you know, it's Birmingham, what it could be, big pay raise. I'm in the state system. So there was a lot of things that went into that. But I did think I had a history of taking ones that weren't good, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, Jack State wasn't necessarily that, but South from nothing.
Starting from nothing.
You know, it's so, and I like that.
Yeah.
You know, you have those things that are put in you that are, I love the idea of being the one to go turn something around and thought, okay, if I get some backing, I'd seen UAB when you guys were there, have some success.
Heck yeah.
You know, be good teams, be top defenses, beat LSU, you know, Go play these games. Beat TCU. It just needs me.
Yeah.
It just needs some TLC
mm-hmm.
and all the people I know. And I'm a former high school coach, so then I decided to take it.
Wow. Talk as much as you can about finances. When you talk about a big pay raise, was it a dramatic increase?
Yeah. I mean, it was from $200,000 to $500,000.
Oh, so more than double.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
No brainer.
So here's the thing that
people... From a high school coach,
yeah. Well, let me say this too. Here's the thing that people don't really get because they don't understand this because you're really the anomaly when it comes to... You've mentioned the state system. So in the state of Alabama and most states, you get to 25 years, you can retire.
Yep.
And Prattville, state system. You spent 2 years at Coffee. Yep. That doesn't count. Piedmont, all the different places you were at.
Tuscaloosa County.
All those are state
South
qualified.
Alabama.
And then you go to South.
Which was purposeful.
And then from South, you go to Jacksonville. So here's what people don't understand about the retirement system. The more money you make, the higher your pension, true pension, is when you retire. I get my dad's from Georgia to this day. My dad's been gone 4 years.
Right.
I get my dad's to this day. And so what he's saying is staying in that system, it builds that to when one day when you retire and you get, I mean, the number is could be absolutely astronomical.
Well, two things. One, they end up capping it at a point. But let me just say, and this was when we go back to your dad, my dad, they didn't make a lot of money. They always had great health insurance and a great retirement.
Great retirement.
So people chose to stay in the state of Alabama. Dr. Bronner, our legislative folks, Jabbo Wagner, those guys that took care of our teachers,
mm-hmm.
where he said, okay, yeah, maybe we don't make as much, but we got this great health insurance and we got this retirement. I know we brought the pay up. But I mean, I just hats off to those people. And people need to understand that's how we've kept good educators for years.
There's no doubt.
I mean, I didn't take some college jobs, loved UAB, but I also was in a good state of retirement.
Sure.
So let's give hats
absolutely.
Off to those guys.
They do.
And be how appreciative.
My mom is in it. My dad was in it.
Right.
It's a huge deal.
And mine as well.
Okay. You're at Jacksonville State. You get the UAB job. Mm-hmm. Do you have an agent at the time?
I do.
Okay.
Yes.
Why did you think it was necessary to have an agent?
You know, I was telling this story the other day. I get a call. I'm leaving Prattville, and a guy says, hey, Coach, I'm Dennis Cordell out of Virginia. You don't know me. I represent some college coaches. I got a lot of coordinator-type guys. I see you as an upcoming guy. Could I represent you? And I said, well, I'm not.
What does that mean?
Yeah, I've heard of it, but, hey, you need somebody to look at contracts, which, believe me, you do. Could I represent you? And I won't take money on this first contract because you've already agreed to the amount, right? Yes. But the next one, will you get a pay raise, then I'll start taking a percentage.
How about that?
Pretty good deal.
That's a great deal.
So
you know what?
Win-win.
Are you still with that guy?
No.
Okay, but that's a hustler. I love that.
Oh, yeah. He's a great guy, and I stayed with him till his distance away when the program shut down. I changed agent.
Changed.
Because of proximity.
Right.
Because he wasn't good.
Okay, walking into UAB, what was the number one or number two things that you said, this has to change?
Josh.
I know there's a list, but I want the most important and the second most important things you had to change.
First was the dynamic of the team. And, you know, when I go around and speak, I talk about two different teams. I walk into the same rules, right?
So mm-hmm.
we've got a pyramid of success and all the things we believe in. And, you know, it's like we say, we're giving young men rules. We don't want to give them too many.
Yeah.
They won't remember them. And, you know, we can't enforce them, but these rules are the rules we're going to follow. So it's the same rules for Jacksonville State players as it was for UAB guys. What's the difference? Jack State guys came in with eye contact. Their chests are up. They're confident. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were not the national champions, but they thought they were going to win. I see the UAB guys. I can't get eye contact in the first meeting.
Wow.
Hey, look at. So they've been told things that weren't true. You know, the coach is going to stay. I'm going to fight for you. We're going to get this equipment or this facility. The facilities were the worst.
Bad.
You know, I had not seen them before I took the job, thank God.
Yeah.
But I had to fix the players' psyche. So they were mentally broken. They were physically broken.
Wow.
All those things. So it was players first, facilities second. So that was kind of my two, because it went with getting players.
Yeah, you've got to have facilities. You've got to have facilities. Yeah, and I think that was...
I would say UAB was a bad high school facility.
Very, very much so. The facility, the weight room, and the media rooms that I had. And I look back, and I know you know Coach Brown. I look back at what Watson did.
Yeah.
With what we had.
That's right.
I'm dumbfounded.
Yeah, it really is phenomenal.
I'm dumbfounded at the players that we had, the wins that we had,
yeah,
the things that we did with what we had, yeah, Bill.
That's right.
It was unreal.
Yeah, I think there was always the hope. I think every one of you guys, and now, you know, and these are my guys too, you know.
Zach Woodman's one of your favorite people, yeah, on planet Earth, and he was there with us.
Yeah, and it was, well, we're going to get this.
Yeah.
If we just win,
yeah,
we're going to get this. And you already had this really historic, great stadium, mm-hmm, Legion Field. And, you know, you got this world-renowned university medically. You know, you're in football hotbed. So you did have those things going for you.
Right. When taking over a program or a business, what are the must-do things the first 90 days?
Yeah. I think a vision. What is your vision? And then you got to communicate that to everybody.
Mm.
You know, and I think having this buy-in, it's amazing. I've speak to so many business guys and so many churches, and these guys are like, wait a second, your coaching team is like my business. I said, right.
Yeah.
It's very similar.
Yeah.
And I said, this vision, whatever it is, and you want it to be the best, just like the best play.
Oh, sure.
But whatever it is, we got to communicate it. And it's got to be over and over. Now, you know, we could talk about all the minutia of that. Be glad to.
Yeah.
But what is the vision? And you got to communicate it quickly and often.
Right. Okay. The hardest part about any business or team is people.
Yeah.
The best part about any business or team,
amen,
is people.
Yep.
What's the hardest part about managing college football coaches?
Oh my gosh. You know, there's so many things there, and I always decided I was going to go for belief and loyalty over experience.
Oh, okay.
Now, I wanted experience and I needed some,
yeah,
but I went for guys that believed in me, believed in the system, that wanted to be with me versus this name guy who had been at Alabama or been at Michigan. And that was no offense to them.
Mm-mm.
It was just, you know what we're getting in here at UAB. So anytime a guy feels like, or it could be a lady in something else, but anybody, they feel like it's a step up.
Mm.
And they're part of the family. You know, I've heard business guys say, well, you can't, don't say family at your business. I said, well, I hear what you're saying, but I wanted them to at least feel the things from a family that I cared about you, that when I tell you something, we're going to do it, or I'm going to die trying. You could trust me that you're not going to work harder than me.
Yeah.
You know, those are the things that I think that vision, because it's about people.
Always.
And so, all right, so let's go to the players. All right, guys, let me just make sure you understand, this is how we're going to do it. Now, remember I said, this is not arrogant, but guys, this is why we win.
Mm.
Now, I could say then, hey, we've won everywhere we've been,
yeah,
but you haven't been an FBS coach. We're going to win here.
Sure.
We're going to win here because we're going to do things the right way. We're going to do every detail. We're going to do it all the right way, every little thing the right way. Now, that's not going to be easy, but it's going to work for you.
Right.
It's going to pay off. I'm going to care about you.
Do coaching staffs that stay together have an advantage over ones that don't, and why?
Yeah, I think they do. I feel they do. I do think there is new ideas you can, mm-hmm, get. And I think there can be some change turnover. Now, if you have it, you got to manage it.
Sure.
But I think the more you can stay with those people, the familiarity, we can still bring in new ideas. We can still, and I always talk about going to put new tools in the toolbox.
That's right.
Even if we don't use them.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, there's another way to train. There's another way to with nutrition, with recruiting, with plays, or whatever your business is. Or I just like what I've been doing. Hey, I see this new idea, but I like what I've been doing. But we're always, we enjoy ideas. We want you to come to us with that. And that was always with the players. There's a chain of command.
Yeah.
You've got a position coach. You've got multiple people. You've got these people to talk about. Here's everybody's numbers. The top of is me. Mm. Now, you might not want to call that number first.
Yeah.
But that number's there to be called. And when you come to my door, I know I love Thomas Cox. He played here.
Yeah.
He's a great player. He's a great guy. But he's going to have to hold on while this player,
no doubt,
talks to me.
Yeah.
And that feeling of and it's so it goes back to communication.
Sure.
You know, here's what we expect. I want to know what's going on. And then you got to really want to know, though.
Right.
You know, these people that say, man, tell me about what's going on with you, but you don't care. And they can see that.
Yeah.
So do I really care about you? And I think when they see that you really care.
Yeah.
And that can also be part of winning. It's, you know, but I care about you as a human being, you know, just like I always talked about getting the degree.
Hmm.
I said, man, that's your gift. You're getting the degree.
Yeah.
Sorry. That's a promise I made to your mom, your auntie. your dad, whoever that was, we're getting the degree. Along the way, we're going to win some games.
We're going to win some games. Did you ever, in all your years of being a head coach, did you ever hire anybody to come in and audit your staff and what you're doing on the field?
I think I was constantly bringing people in. Now, I've done that for other people.
Yeah.
I think I was constantly, whether it was Jack Crow, whether it was Dad, where, hey, come to practice. And I used to tell guys this all the time. I want you to come watch us practice. And I tell the players, I want people to come see us. I want Thomas Cox to come see us. And, man, I've never seen anybody practice that hard. Now, that's the goal. Whether it was true or not, I didn't say the best players.
Sure. No,
no offense, guys.
Yeah.
You know, I said how hard we play, how much we care. You know, does he come in the building and everybody speak to him?
Mm-hmm.
All those other things that we can control, the effort.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe, yeah, that was us being audited. I want to know all the time. I wanted the feedback. So to that degree.
Who did you lean on from a, I want to say someone above you. Who did you lean on? Who did you pick up the phone on a Monday, on a Tuesday, on a Sunday and call and talk through things and ask questions in the coaching world?
You know, for me, it was within the staff more than it was. Now, but I had my dad.
Yeah.
And, you know, that relationship had kind of changed as he got older and I got older. That was sharp to the day he died, you know. Yeah. But it was, he understood.
Sure.
He knew, you know, and I might be complaining about our fundraising or whatever, but it was for me, it was a lot about just getting things off my chest.
Sure.
And it's him agreeing or, hey, you're all right. You know, that's going to be something. You know, but I think all of us having somebody to talk through things with, and then having some of those guys on staff as well, where we were, because that's what I enjoyed.
Sure.
You know, is like, all right, how can we do this better? Who out there is doing it? Now, I'm a constant study.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think I heard Andy Reid talking about, you're reading a book and I'm reading about plays. Mm-hmm. But I was always leadership, whether it was military leaders, whether it's Pastor Chris, who is these guys that you could get a nugget from?
Sure.
That I could take back, you know, John Maxwell's of the world. What can we use to help lead our team better? Things just like what you're doing. That's the stuff you're trying to get.
Mack Brown was at Texas, had a lot of success there at North Carolina now. Did a good job the first time there. He's doing a good job now.
Yeah.
He's more of what people call a CEO coach.
Yeah.
And then you got the Sabins of the world.
Yeah.
And I know you know Coach Saban real well.
Yeah.
He is heavily involved on the defensive part. And then you've got other offensive coaches that are heavily involved on the offensive part. Mm-hmm. You didn't call the defense much.
No.
The last however many years you were there, would you consider yourself more of a CEO coach or would you consider more of a tactical in the weeds coach?
Yeah, I wanted to be in the middle of that.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to know what everybody was doing and know enough to know, you know, and I think me starting out as an offensive coach. And that's what people don't really know about.
I did not know that.
And so they're like, well, you're just a defensive guy. And I'm like, the difference, and I say that's kind of where I think high school coaches that work their way up have such an advantage. Just like I would use, let's use DeBoer.
Yeah.
I don't know a lot about him, but I know he's won everywhere at small stops where he didn't have everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my point was I was in the weight room.
Yeah.
I was a strength coach. I was a track coach.
Wow.
I taped ankles.
Yeah.
You know, it's all those things to go when I bring in the strength coach that I knew what we were talking about.
Sure.
You know, now he knew, you know, he was the true expert, but I knew enough on all those things. And then what would happen with me, and I was in the middle in the spring, and really I kind of favored the offense in the spring.
Why'd you do that?
Because I knew I was going to end up in August with the defense.
Yeah, you're right.
So I wanted them kids, I wanted those players and coaches to know I'm really leaning toward offense here.
Yeah.
Then I kind of, because in August, it was defense time.
Mm.
And I think if you look at, I watch Kirby Smart on the sideline, he talks the offense every play, but he's still with the defense.
Defensive guy. Yeah.
Nick.
Sure.
You know, I think those are my guys that kind of, Pete Carroll, I think. So, you know, the offense, that's where people don't understand. You know, especially me coming from being on offense, but why not use your expertise? Now, calling every play? No. Because that's too much.
Then
I can't do the CEO things I need to do.
You're right. That's true. So let's go back to UAB. Being there the first time, tell me about the first. How long were you there before the program shut down?
From January to it shut down and right after we beat Southern Miss.
Okay, so 1 year.
1 year.
Okay. Tell me about that first year. What was that first season like?
I tell you what, it was so rewarding. It's probably as rewarding as I've ever been a part of because these kids had it so bad. And I'll tell the story. You know, so we're going to get money for a locker room. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the reasons I decided to go.
Yeah.
All right. I know it's horrible. Well, we got some funds to build one. So, of course, I tear down a tractor shed and build one in the back.
But I saw that, yeah.
When that was built, those kids started crying.
Mm.
When they got new uniforms, which I got to design, you know, I tell that story with Jacob, my son. He's a senior at Piedmont. Jake, I'm leaving Jack State, going to UAB. I know you're going to be upset. Dad, I know. I'm like, I know. He said, no, Dad, they got the worst uniforms in America. There's your 17-year-old going, okay, uniforms are kind of key.
So, huge.
Yeah. So we designed the uniforms.
That's so good.
You know, but when they saw the uniforms, they start tearing. I mean, it was like emotional, the Troy game.
Yeah.
You know, beat Troy the first game and people are picking you up and just the joy. You know, when you're not expected to do anything and then you get to do it and then to shut it down.
Ooh.
Oh.
So before the program shut down,
yep.
What was the hardest part about being there?
Oh, gosh. You know, facilities were so bad, but we made them better.
Mm-hmm.
And not one, you know, I mean, you got to raise the Jimmies and Joes. I mean, you know, so we went out and got some good players, but I think the development of those players, we had about 35 guys that were literally injured. I'm not kidding you. First day we go in the weight room and I'm like, all right, who are all these guys? Mike Jones, the trainer.
Yeah.
Well, these guys have had surgery. I said, 35 of them. Yeah. I said, okay, they can't do this, but they can do sit-ups.
Yeah.
You know, those guys quickly decided they wanted to be well, you know.
They got well quick.
And they had to get well.
Yeah.
But it was, no, everybody's working, but we had a lot of injured guys. We had to get better players. We had to fix the facility. So it was this big, you know, a little bit of everything.
Right. Tell me about the program being shut down.
You know, I say, it, you know, both parents have passed, you know. I mean, you know that. I mean, it's not death, but it's close.
Mm.
Because, one, what we had done.
Yeah.
You know, we get 6-6. We get bowl eligible. We got most of the team back the next year. People were believing. We're having people come to games. Recruiting was going good.
Yeah.
All these things. I believe we were going to find a way to raise the money, even though, you know, the shutdown probably created all that. But,
sure.
But then to get that pulled out from under you was just, it was as close to death. I'm sending players. I'm having to help recruit for them to go to somewhere else. And your coaches, none of them, they don't have a job.
None of them have a job.
I mean, you can't make it up. I mean, it's like a horror story of everybody's got to leave and you've had success.
What is one thing that people don't know about that bringing the program back?
You know, I think everybody knows how hard people fought, but I think it was, man, what a great story from the ashes of, once again, it's almost like getting a job. It was all these different people that were willing to fight and put their money out there and expose the truth. You know, as I said, that'll come out in the movie someday. You know, we go, okay, what really happened here? But we did. It got exposed. We raised money or started to raise money to bring it back. Now we bring it back and it's nothing. You know, there's no players there. There's no money. There's no facility to, you know, creating this foundation to raise this money to do it the right way.
Yeah.
That's what's so cool, you know, about that story from terrible to this great story.
And then I think that one of the things that I know you're proud of and I'm proud of as alumni is, I mean, we were getting dressed and having meetings in a tractor shed.
Correct.
To what I felt like you designed one of the coolest, most, and I say this respectfully, one of the most space-efficient facilities I've ever seen and a state-of-the-art facility.
Yeah.
I'm so proud of that. And I know you've got to be. How was that process?
Yeah. So Jan Cowart was, if you know that he played at Auburn, was an architect. And I go see Clemson when we'd shut down, you know, Dabo and Woody McCorvey, great coach.
I love Woody.
One of the best guys in the world. And he's the assistant AD for football, you know, with Dabo. And he said, man, we're building this brand new indoor and we got this Disney World complex we're going to build here. That was when, before they built their building in 14,
but
after we got shut down. And he says, if you ever build something, you need to call this guy Jan Cowart. Well, Jan had played ball at Auburn for Jack Crow.
What?
And he's an architect.
How about that?
So he designs all their
stuff. Football player. That's great.
So what the cool story is, we literally go create this foundation from nothing, which wasn't easy. People weren't real happy we were creating this foundation, but we do it. You know, and these guys, Tommy Bregel and Hans Smith and Justin Kraft, who's the hero of this whole thing. Miller Gorey, Jimmy Lee, I don't know if I said Kraft O'Neill.
Yeah.
They're the key components of this foundation we create to raise money that raises money for UAB Athletics with outside help. These guys all gave their own money And then we started seeing the people of Birmingham, and I said, we're going to create something that we can be proud of. I got to be part of that whole design.
Yeah.
We raised the money, but we didn't have anywhere to go in inclement weather. So we were sitting around talking, and I said, yeah, we got to have an indoor. You know, at that time, it's $20 million. Now it's $40
million. Yeah.
You know, I mean, $20 million would have been, might as well have been $100 million.
Might have been, yeah.
I said, man, what could we do? You know, he said, oh, you ought to build a flat roof like we did for Auburn Equestrian, and laughed.
Hmm.
And that started the process of, what if we just did no doors, no air? Legacy.
Yeah.
Comes forward. Big, you know, UAB folks believes in our vision. And I could tell, we got them out there on the field. I got the 50-something players at that time, and a plane flew over. I said, y'all seen Sea Rock City? They said, yeah. I said, what if that was Legacy on top of this pavilion?
Wow.
They agree with a lot of other people helping. They pay for the pavilion. We raised the 22 and a half.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. You sold that to Legacy? Saying it? Coach, that's brilliant.
That, and that, there was other people that were involved.
So let me say this. So if you've never been to Birmingham, and if you've ever driven north of Birmingham at all, everywhere you go, it's like as bad as Alexander Shinara. You see Sea Rock City, Sea Rock City. So you looked at the Legacy people and said, hey, what if you were flying over this building and said, what if that said Legacy?
Yeah.
That's so good.
And what was so great about those guys, they had done sponsorship at the, you know, Civic Center.
Mm-hmm.
They'd done
yep.
race car. We had other people that knew them. They used to be UAB Credit Union. So we had this history.
Yeah.
And there was other things that completed the deal, but they believed in that pavilion saved us. So then we attached it to the building so we didn't have to have such a big weight room.
You're right.
So the weight room now can flow out into the pavilion.
Mm.
I said, I wish we'd have copyrighted that pavilion because there's 100 of them out there now. But sure. It's such a great thing. 20, you know, it's 120 on the turf and we're 80 degrees in there with a breeze.
It's awesome.
So we could go out there. We could walk out on a porch.
Yeah.
So let's see. I mean, so, you know, we used meeting rooms, offices for meeting rooms, and used our space. So we raised as much as we could, and we were able to put every, I mean, that whole facility is fundraised.
Mm.
How many of those are out there?
Not many.
I don't know of any.
All right. So let's ask this question. What do you think your number, and don't be modest, okay? What do you think your number one skill is with raising money that you have?
I think selling the vision.
Hmm. That's how much money did you help raise through that whole process?
Gosh, I think all in all, and I won't count the stadium because
that's. Yeah, and I can't count that. County, That's different.
You know,
yeah.
That was just I was just part of that vision, and they, you know, I mean, I've heard $60
million. Wow.
But, you know, we know we did the building, which was 22 and a half, and we put money back into the facility, but it was a lot. And,
man,
that was such a team effort. That was
Yeah. I know it wasn't all you, but you were like kind of the head of the spear on
that
thing.
I was the Pied Piper.
The head of the spear on that thing. So I agree with that. Let's transition into talking more about the state of where we are in college football, because college football is a business. What's the number one part of college football that needs to be changed today?
I think we just need to govern the NIL, not take it away. We just need to govern it. One, so there's some rules. And I know it sounds like we're heading in that direction, but this where they're tampering on people's rosters, that's what's killing our game. Where week two, you know, and I keep using Thomas, but Thomas Cox played quarterback, and, man, we liked him, and he was 20 for 25, and all of a sudden, hey, let's offer this guy week two. So all of a sudden you get reached out to by a third party, and you're trying to think about the next opponent.
Wow.
And you've just been told, hey, we're going to have a starting quarterback job down here the road. Oh, and we got $200,000 to offer you.
So you think that's happening?
Oh, that's happening.
Prevalent.
It was happening before, but without money.
That's
right? Crazy. I mean, people were recruiting guys off rosters, but hey, they had to sit out a year, which they changed.
Yeah.
Now they're immediately eligible. And what we said, just don't let them be immediately eligible unless they're a graduate, because what that does, that creates cheating. And here's this kid, you're looking at him, you go, man, is he having girlfriend problems? Is he not making the grades? What's wrong with him today? We know he's been.
USC's calling him.
Correct.
Akron's calling him. Tennessee's calling
him. Nothing else. Just messing this young man's mind up.
Wow.
When if we could just eliminate some of those things and put it in a box where, okay, if the guy leaves you, okay.
Yeah.
But not where his brain is messed up in the season and it creates, anyway.
Yeah. That's good. Honest opinion here. What head coach is doing the best job in college football currently?
Well, I think if you just said with all the resources.
Okay. Not, no.
All right, let's go. We'll go with two factors.
Two factors, yeah.
Kirby Smart.
Got all the resources in the world.
He's got all the resources in the world, and he's using them.
And I would agree with that. He's a good coach. Yep.
And so I would just say, you know, this is no, you know, we're not best friends or anything. Like, this is just, he knows all the keys to the kingdom, and he's at a place where he can use them, and he's using them.
Mm.
Now, that's a good question on the set. Now I would start going to these guys. Remember the guys that I always said could do more with less?
Sure.
Kansas. And, you know, I mean, it's just like why I watched Bill Snyder. When Kansas State became the losingest team in the history of college football, and he turned that around. Man, I want to study this guy.
Yeah.
Give me the guys that have done more with less, and they keep finding a way to win. That's the people I want to study.
Who is that guy right now?
You know, I think Alabama chose DeBoer for a reason. You know,
yeah.
I mean, this guy had won everywhere he's been. Now, this is going to be a different animal. But give me those guys that have worked their way up. You know, I'd have to get back with you on that.
Yeah.
But if you're looking, that's the guys I want to look at.
Yeah.
You know.
Other than Georgia, because they're probably right now, they're the team right now. Other than Georgia, what team in your opinion has the most chance to be successful this year besides Georgia?
You know, if you just look at what they went out and got, and probably in a not as great league, Ohio State.
Really?
Yeah. I mean,
everybody's on Ryan's butt.
I know. I think he went out and got him a really good play caller. They're not in a tougher league. I think they'll have a chance to be right there when it, because, you know, look at the league now.
Yeah.
Can they pull it off, you know, in the end? I mean, it's hard to pick against what you're seeing out of Alabama right now. But, Texas, Alabama. You know, there's all these other really good ones that are, you know, that are close. I mean, you know, it's, I think they're going to be right there.
So I got a bunch of random questions. Some are football, some are life. What was the number one thing that changed in you and Jennifer's life when you started making over $300,000 a year?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think just peace of knowing you're took care of, knowing that, what, you know, I mean, because we, you know, when you grow up like I did as a coach's son, she, you know, her dad worked in a cement plant and, you know, it was solid. But I think just a piece of knowing we can help take care of our kids, we can get them through school. I think it's more of a piece. And then obviously the being able to give back.
Sure.
Like you want.
Yeah.
And be involved in things that matter. Like we've always given to church, but your church and you know, some charities and things. I think that's really neat.
That helps.
It does.
Okay. So I can ask this question because I was there. What do you regret about parenting your kids in those early years? Anything?
I mean, I think for me, always wanting to be there as much as possible and being a coach.
Mm.
I don't know if I have real regrets. You know, my wife did a really good job with them. You had wanted to have been there more.
Sure.
But, you know, my thing was always, I was so conscious of it that it was football and that was my hobby and then family.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a great golfer or hunter or, you know, it was try to put my, and I'm not telling guys not to go play, but if you're in this job that takes so much of your time, family better be number, you know, that better be number one as far as, when you get time, you better be spending it.
Sure, I agree with that. I feel like that I missed a lot of stuff in Jonna's, my oldest, she's 15 now, first two or three years of her life, just because, I mean, you're 60, 70, 80 hours a week. And like, now I'll say this, the Lord got me out of it when we had our second kid.
Yeah.
And it's been the best decision I ever made, just simply because what we're doing now is so much better for us and our family.
Correct.
Okay, this is a generic question, and I want as specific as possible. What's the number one thing you must have to be successful in any business or team? The number one thing.
I think you gotta have the right people around you.
People, I agree.
Yeah, it's people.
I agree. When you're looking to hire somebody, what quality do you look for first?
It starts with, do I like them? And I think when you've talked to
that's people, a great answer. That's a great answer. People don't say that, Bill, but that's a great answer.
I mean, I got to get along with this person. And when you've met as many people as we've
that's
met,
really good.
And players and staff and, you know, and I'd say people can sue you, but, you know, it's, you know, the questions to ask to have a chance and really know them pretty quickly.
Okay, this is a self-reflecting question. What is the one thing you would like to improve in yourself when leading people?
Oh, gosh. There's a lot. You know, I think probably having true empathy to really understand everybody's situations and being able to relay that back in the proper manner.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, maybe sometimes I'm not the kindest. Even though I think I always... I always have their best interest in heart, but I think just relaying that and maybe feeling that better, you know, to find a way to fill their needs better. You know, cause I really believe in servant leadership.
Yeah.
You know, I do. And so I think with my job, there was a toughness that needed to be in there and people need to see it. So what's that balancing act of having enough, the toughness I think that you need to get through the everyday trials and tribulations, yet being empathetic to their situation.
I'm with you. Like my wife and my work wife, Sierra, says being sympathetic, empathetic sometimes as a, like, cause between you and I are similar in the fact of like working, like we like work. I don't golf. Yeah. I don't hunt. I hunt with my kid, but like for the most part, like I like to work and I like to, you know, be with my family.
That's it.
So like being sympathetic and empathetic to some of the things that happen to our staff.
That's it.
Is really difficult. So I'm with you.
Just put your head down. Let's go to work.
Yeah.
And that's not always the right answer.
It ain't always the right answer.
Right.
Hard question. If you were a head coach tomorrow in college and money was not an issue, who would be your first hire? Like specific person?
Yeah, it would be one of my guys that have been with me, that get me, that know me. And there's more than one of those guys. I think just believing in what we believe in, you know, our process. So I think that's who I go get. I don't have to convince them that this works.
It's one phone call.
It's one phone call. And they believe.
Yeah.
You know, they believe in the process, the system, all the things we put in place. So that would be mine.
Yeah. Do you want to get back into college coaching?
I'm considering it.
Are you?
Crazy. I feel good, you know?
Yeah.
But here's where I am at. And I tell this people all the time. I'm praying, Lord, hey, if it's supposed to be, it'll be. Yeah. And I'm not willing to put some boots to the ground.
No doubt.
But I just don't know if that, and that's been the way last few years as I've had people call me, and I'm like, if there's not alignment and they, you know, and that may just be the case because I'm now, you know, I've got my radio show podcast with Jocks. I'm enjoying that. You know, I needed something to do. And so I think that's kind of where I'm at. I do feel like I might have one more in me if there's some really good alignment and somewhere I could really help.
Yeah. Why'd you retire?
You know, I had back fusion. I'd had a discectomy in 97, and then it finally got so bad. I really hurt it again at Jack State in 13, and by the time we played BYU in the bowl game, I couldn't hardly stand for more than about 5 minutes.
Really?
Yeah, so in that spring, it's like, I mean, I'm legs dead all the way down into my foot. Something's got to happen, and every doctor, it's a fusion, which is, you know, that sounds like a death sentence.
Wow.
And if you don't get it well and you don't rest it, you're going to be doing this again. And when you've had back pain since 1983 on and off, I'm like, okay, I got to get out of this to get well. And I'm mentally drained and tired too.
But
I had to get physically well first, and now I feel good. So it worked.
Yeah. Okay. This is an interesting question. And you retired, what year did you retire?
After the 21 season.
After the 21.
So 22, summer of 22.
Okay.
2 years ago.
So NIL was not.
Just started.
It just started.
Just started.
Okay. And you may not be able to answer this question totally. With the landscape of college football, how would you do things differently than when you coached back in 21 and if you coached in 2025?
Yeah, you are in an NIL world. And it's got now. What I would do would be and that's what I'm kind of doing now, but I would go talk to everybody I could talk to and put every tool in the toolbox of what other people are doing, trying to come up with the best situation, whether I'm talking to AAC teams, whether I'm talking to a Sun Belt team, or I'm talking to an SEC team, which is all different.
Sure.
What are the tools in the toolbox? What is being done? How can we do this the most equitable? Because I was just big, and this is what I don't ever want to lose. The walk-ons were scholarship players to me.
Sure.
Seat 1 and seat 50. Now, we know seat 50 was the starting receiver, and seat 1 might have been the scout team guy who's might going to be a walk-on this whole time. Those guys felt like they were the same guys.
Yeah.
I want them to feel the same. So that's going to be important to me, how we treat every player in that locker room and try and keep it as close to the same for each one. And I think that's some of the problem in NIL.
Yeah.
So I can't answer that, but I think the big thing for me is trying to be an expert on it by studying these other people, which I'm trying to do now.
Let's dig it there. Who is doing the best job with the NIL stuff right now?
Well, the people with the most money. I mean, I hate to say that, but when you got the most money, you go get the best player. And that's kind of the world.
That's crazy. Did you say that? But it's true.
It's true. It's facts. It's facts. Now, I mean, and like anything, we could look at our government right now, but you can mismanage money.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, obviously that's going on. I think we heard it the other day. You can go pick the wrong horse.
Yeah.
But within reason, the most money here is winning.
Wow. Is there anybody out there right now that's getting just super creative with it? Because, I mean, here's the obvious ones. The obvious ones are Georgia,
yeah.
Tennessee, yeah. Texas A&M, and Alabama, Michigan. They're the obvious ones that got just not unlimited, but they just, their pockets are so deep.
So to answer that, who is doing, and let's go look at them. Who's got lower resources? Look at us at UAB.
Yeah.
Who found a way? Who's doing it better? They're taking guys, maybe the two stars, giving them some money and still win. That's the guys we go look at. Because we can go out there and I think we can find that out.
Who do you think that is right now?
You know, I really probably can't answer that
right
now. I think if we went and studied, and I'm talking college football now almost every day, I think as we go look this year and we go look at those teams in the top 25 and you say, okay, wait a second, they're coming from not the same resources and they're still winning. That's going to tell the tale.
Let me tell you, and you may not know a lot about this guy and a lot about this team, but you know who I'm looking forward to seeing this year?
Who's that?
Nebraska.
Yeah. I like Matt Rhule. He's a friend.
I think he does good. I mean,
yeah.
The college and the program are totally different. See, I don't know that you can judge his success at Carolina, but like Temple, that's a freaking horrible place.
Yes.
Philly's horrible.
Yeah. I went to see the Eagles, and I stopped by, and Matt Rhule and I just hit it off, and Lord, he treated me great, and so we've been friends ever since.
Did a great job at Baylor. I think that they put a stat up the other day comparing all the other coaches to Tom Osborne because Dad had a player Dwayne Harris, played at Nebraska, had a lot of success there. And I love Nebraska back when Dwayne played there. I love watching them, and they were winning Orange Bowl and all that good stuff. So, like, they put a stat up there, and it was Tom Osborne, and it was all these other coaches.
Yeah, right.
It was staggering.
Yeah, staggering.
It was staggering.
Yeah, he's brilliant.
I'm looking forward to watching Matt this year.
I am too.
I think he's going to do a good job. Tell me about what you're doing day-to-day now.
Yeah. So, I won't name the names, but I have schools, college teams. I'm consulting. I have some speaking engagements. But really what I've sunk my teeth into, Jocks and I have partnered up. Every Monday at 4:00, I'm on Three Man Front.
Yep. Great show here in Birmingham. And you can listen to that live. Like, you can stream it too, can't you? Yes. So WJOX is a famous radio station. Been around since I was a kid.
Yeah. Rated the number one college football radio station in America.
It is.
Yeah.
It's unreal.
So I'm on with those guys at 1:00. And then every Thursday night at 6:00.
Okay.
And then they're also playing it Friday and Saturday is my radio show podcast. So it's a podcast. We're doing it there in the studios at Kingless. Yeah. But they're playing the radio portion, just the audio, on Thursday at 6:00. Now, it comes online right after the show tonight, so you'll be able to, you can watch it, you know.
Tell me what you're talking about on the show.
We're talking college football. And so, of course, there's going to be always some high school talk, maybe a little pro, but it's mostly college football, and we're talking specific coaching, you know, and that's why I say it's kind of my playbook.
Yeah.
Behind the scenes. Okay, you thought you saw this, but let me tell you really what I think it is.
Yeah.
The coach's perspective, because there's a lot of former players. They're good.
Yeah.
Very few coaches.
Sure. There.
So
I agree with that.
A different perspective.
Give me a snapshot of what you talk, what's going to air on the first show.
We just finished number 3.
Yeah.
Just started. We got to get the word out, continue. But so yesterday we taped it. So we're going to do a top 5. You know, we're talking about the top 5. And I do the top 12. We do the top defense of the week.
Yeah.
We talk about local teams, you know, UAB, Alabama, Auburn, kind of what's going on with them. Game of the week this week, it's Texas and Michigan.
It is, yeah.
So really study those guys hard. So just trying to be very relevant. And then we kind of at the end, we talk about like the new technology. You know, how does the headsets affect? How does the iPads affect? You know, that type things. Maybe NIL.
Yeah.
You know.
What do you think about the headsets?
MOS, the Dr. Pepper, Bill Clark.
Dr. Pepper, we got it.
Yeah, I think the headsets are going to be interesting. You're going to wait for people to go, hey, we're going to wait till 15 seconds. When the mic shut off and then, all right, now you got a signal again, or there's going to be a lot of gamesmanship. I think bigger than the headsets is the iPads. There's 18 iPads on the sideline. Every coach I talk to is not, we don't even know what to do. I mean, it's game film. You're watching it.
So that's what I thought. I thought about that. I thought it's going to be interesting to see who can morph and learn that the quickest.
The quickest.
That's the thing, because here's the thing. People don't understand this. College is the only level that didn't have
correct.
It. Trustful High School?
100%.
Coach, Trustful High School goes to the sideline, the linemen get in the tent, and they watch the film.
Right. Been going on for a while.
Been going on for a while. The pros, they got the surface.
Yes.
They're sitting over there. I don't know if they're doing pictures or video.
Pictures.
but they're seeing same. What's going
yeah.
on.
Yeah.
College has been in the college.
They've got 18 of them with the game film. And these guys are like,
is it like it's coming from like the series before?
Yes.
Man, that's crazy.
It's crazy.
That's I think that's a huge game changer.
Huge.
Because like I would give just a silly example is my son's sixth grade team played the other night. Okay. Yeah. And he went over the practice before and then also in pregame. He said, hey, if we go in balance, this is what we got to do.
Yeah.
Well, you and I both know. You probably see better from the sideline than most people.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it's really difficult to see from the sideline.
Yes.
So Tegan, my son, goes, they're in unbalanced. They're in unbalanced. And he goes, no, they're not. No, they're not. And Tegan goes, okay. So we go over the film and he goes, first thing I need to do, I need to apologize. They were in unbalanced. And so being able to see that, because how many times have you been there on Sunday watching the film and go, dang, they were in so-and-so.
Yeah.
Or they were doing this.
Right.
Because there's only so many things that a player can communicate. And there's only so many things that a coach can see in the box.
Right.
And so I think this is going to be an extremely huge thing. How big, and I don't think people are talking about this, how big is the 2-minute timeout in college football?
It's another timeout. I mean, so
it's four.
And there it's going to set up so many more 2-minute scenarios to play out because you got the extra timeout.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a lot of gamesmanship. I mean, we've all been watching the pros for years, which I hadn't watched as much till recently.
Yeah.
Now I'm watching all the pro games and you're going, how many games come down to the end just because they have that extra timeout?
Do you have NFL Red Zone? Coach.
I know.
It's unreal.
Yeah.
I love it. It's my favorite thing.
Oh, yeah.
Tegan, it's odd for a kid growing up in Alabama to like pro football better than college.
Oh.
But my son loves pro football.
Well, that's,
one of his bucket list things this year is we want to go to a pro game. So I'm going to call Zach and try to get up there and watch Tennessee play.
That's it.
Let's talk schematics a little bit just to nerd out. What's the hardest thing that offenses are doing right now that's hard on defensive coordinators?
Yeah, it's the multiplicity of formations, motions, but horizontal and vertical spreading of the field with a quarterback that can run. That gets started at the high school level, and here's the difference. Everybody, well, there's always been quarterbacks that can run. Yes, but we weren't throwing it like they are now.
No.
And we know when we put those two together, it's 12 guys on offense if they know how to use it.
Sure. I remember Coach Amato.
Chuck Amato?
Used to always say, when he can run, he used to say it a different way. When he can run, you're playing with 11. If he can't run, you're really playing with 10.
That's right. So either he's an extra guy or he's minus one. If he can't run, I mean, please give me that quarterback couldn't run.
Well,
defensively.
And I think that also, too, like you made a great point. I didn't even think about this. Back in my day, you had a running quarterback and a throwing quarterback.
That's it.
And you knew when Johnny came in.
That's it.
You knew you could adjust.
100%.
But you knew when the stand-up drop-back guy,
right. You
had to adjust.
That's it.
Not the case.
No, not even close.
Not the case these days. So you got to be – I mean, it's changing defenses. What are defenses doing these days that's new and like, intriguing to you?
Yeah, I think we're seeing a lot more of the three-high safety look where they're inserting the safety to give all these different coverage reads because the quarterback's sitting there in the gun going pre-snap. I'm looking at this backside safety. Now there's three safeties across that they can invert one of them, roll them.
On the snap of the ball.
Yes. And so that's really been the biggest change in the last few years. Because if there was a defense, I probably ran it.
Yeah.
You know, we were so multiple, 3-4, 4-3 bear. That three safety look, even though we'd bring in extra DBs, was something I was just starting to play with.
That's interesting.
To be able to just keep doing what we were doing that'd be so successful.
Okay, so if somebody's out there, there's a coach out there, there's a local person out there, where can someone find you? I want to make sure everybody listens to your podcast.
Yes.
I want to make sure if someone wants to hire you for consulting, whether it be high school or college, I want them to get to you. Where can people find you?
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter.
Okay, perfect. Yeah.
At Coach Bill Clark.
Okay, great.
So I'm on Twitter. Also, don't mind giving out my email.
Yeah.
It's at Coach BC. It's CoachBC@gmail.com.
CoachBC@gmail.com to get Coach Clark and then also Twitter. Say Twitter again.
Twitter's at Coach Bill Clark.
At Coach Bill Clark. So if you need to hire Coach, want to just whatever with him, watch his shows. Anytime you have somebody that's got the experience and the time involved in college that's analyzing something online or on the air, it's worth a listen. Cole does a great job. Cole Kublik.
He does.
G-Mac does a great job. They never coached.
It's just different.
It's just different. And so we've got a player's perspective. Anytime you can sit and listen to a coach, I think it's needed. Anything else before we leave, Coach? Anything?
Yeah, great question. Very enjoyable. Awesome. Appreciate you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right.